The time has come. This Shia Parshat Matot Tavshin Ayin Vav is sponsored by friends of David Wicks Zal. In his memory, Leilui Nishmat David Ben Mordechai Shmuel Zal. What I'd like to think about and look into tonight is Kibush Eretz Yisrael. That Kibush Eretz Yisrael actually started in the parasha of Chukat. The parasha of Chukat in the book of Bamidbar. Right? Bamidbar, Naso, Baloscha, Shlach, Korach, Chukas. What parasha are we up to? We're up to the parasha Matos. Right? What? So, somehow the parasha Matot and the parasha of Chukat connect to each other on this topic that we want to look into tonight, and that topic is Kibush Eretz Yisrael. We know that the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu took the Jews out of Mitzrayim and brought them in the direction, if he didn't bring them all the way, but he brought them in the direction of Eretz Yisrael, that was all because Eretz Yisrael was the promised land. I mean, it was promised to Abraham, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov. And so Moshe Rabbeinu, leading B'nai Yisrael, was going to fulfill that promise. However, there was a problem in Eretz Yisrael HaMa'aravit, and that is that it was occupied. It was occupied by non-Jews, Amei Kena'an. So that in order for B'nai Yisrael to accomplish Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, they had to go through a process of Kibush Eretz Yisrael. And that Kibush of Eretz Yisrael was led by Yoshua bin Nun, and is basically the story of the book of Yoshua. The book of Yoshua is the story of Kibush Eretz Yisrael al Yedei Chayalei Am Yisrael. That's what happens in the book of Yoshua. But there's another story in the parasha of Chukat. Right? Chukat, several weeks ago? Chukat. And that's the first source here on this sheet. The pasuk says, "Veishlach Yisrael malachim el Sichon Melech Emori lemor." Now, Emori is the name of a nation, but also Emori is a name that's used for all the nations of Eretz Canaan. Everybody in Eretz Canaan is called Emori. Now, who was the Melech HaEmori? He was Sichon. Now, where was Sichon? Was he on the eastern side of the Jordan or the western side of the Jordan? I mean, he must have been on the eastern side, because the Jews hadn't crossed over the Jordan into Jericho yet. They don't do that till the book of Yoshua. So that Eva Hayadei, right, all of these words that describe the situation are talking about the Jordan River, east of the Jordan River. That's where B'nai Yisrael were. They were more or less opposite Jericho. If you have in your mind the map of Eretz Yisrael, you know that the Jordan River is the eastern border of Eretz Yisrael today. But it was also the eastern border when we talk about Eretz Yisrael. That's the Eretz Yisrael we talk about, from Yam HaGadol, the Mediterranean Sea, until the Jordan River. That's the, maybe that's not the promised, but it's the land of Israel that Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about and that Yoshua conquered. Right? The land between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River. Now, in this pasuk it says that Yisrael sent emissaries to Sichon, Now, Sihon was on the eastern side of the Jordan River. He was the king of the Amori. And there was something they wanted from him, that Bnei Yisrael wanted from Sihon. So the Pasuk, the second Pasuk says, Ebrana ba'artzecha, lo nita basadeh uvecharen. He says, we'll pass through your land. We're not going to stop in the fields or in the vineyards. Lo nishteh mei be'er. We're not going to drink the water in the wells. B'derech ha'melech nelech. We'll go on the highway. We'll go on the superhighway where everybody can see us, what we're doing. Ad asher n'avor givolecha. So what did Bnei Yisrael want to do? They just wanted to go from where they were through the land of Sihon to where they wanted to be, which was on the eastern side of the Jordan River opposite Jericho, because that's where they went into Eretz Canaan. So that's what they wanted. V'lo natan Sihon et Yisrael avor b'gvulo. He didn't let them. He refused permission. They weren't allowed to go through the land of Sihon. V'yesov Sihon et kol amo, v'yetze l'krat Yisrael hamidbara, v'yavo yatza, v'yelachem b'Yisrael. So here's Sihon. They say, can we go through? He says, no, you can't go through. Not only can't you go through, I'm going to go to war against you. I, Sihon, will take my army and go to war against you. Right? Vayakehu Yisrael efichare. Pasuk Kavdalek. Vayakehu Yisrael efichare. Vayirash et artso mearnon ad yabok ad b'nei amon. Ki az gevul b'nei amon. So the important part of the Pasuk is the beginning. Vayakehu Yisrael efichare. He beat them. The Jews, the Yisraelim, beat the Sihonites, the Amorites. They beat them in battle. And then it says, Vayirash et Artso. Now these kind of technical legal terms are always difficult. What exactly does Vayirash et Artso mean? What it sounds like they so completely overwhelmed Sihon, the king of the Amori, that they actually took control of his land, which is not such a hard thing to do when you have your army on the spot. Right? It's always in kibush, in conquering. The difficulty is, how do you keep the conquered nation conquered after you withdraw the army? Right? Case in point, of course, is Iraq. It's a very difficult thing, and it was something that was a problem in the ancient world, and the leaders in the ancient world thought about it all the time. Again, you conquer somebody, you conquer a land, you have an army. So as long as your army is there, so they stay conquered. But the army doesn't want to stay there. All the guys in the army, they want to go home. They want to be with their families. I mean, enough is enough, right? Everything has... So they start pulling back. Once they start pulling back, the native population might revolt, might take a stand. But here in this Pasuk, it says that what are we up to? What are we up to? Again, Pasuk Kavdalet Vayakehu Yisrael V'Cherev. They beat them. The army of Israel beat the army of Sihon. Vayirashet Artso. And they inherited the land, which I would take to mean that they stayed put, they stayed there. They were there. And we'll see it again in the words of the Abarbanel. Okay, look at the Rashi. Pasuk Bet, Ebra b'artzecha. Afal pi shelo nitztavu liftoach lahem b'shalom, bikshu mehem shalom. Well, you know, Rashi says, even though they were not commanded, they, Bnei Yisrael, were not commanded liftoach shabbat shalom, they didn't have to offer them peace. They didn't have to offer them a peaceful resolution. Nevertheless, Bikshu Mehem Shalom. What did they ask for? What did Bnei Yisrael say? They said, just let us go by. Right? Lo Nitev Sadav Echarim. Lo Nishtemi Be'er. B'derech HaMelech Melech. They said to him, we come in peace. We don't want anything from you. We just want to pass through because we're going to the other side of the mountain. And it's easier to pass through the land of Sichon than to go around. So they made an offer, which according to Rashi was similar to making an offer of peace. We're not here to go to war with you. Which was the same thing that Bnei Yisrael did under Yoshua bin Nun, when they went to capture the nations in Canaan. They said, if you want to make peace with us, make peace and we won't fight with you. But if you refuse, then we'll go to war. So that the Gemara understands this as being a necessary requirement of warfare. That you can't go to war. I mean, you know you're going to win. Right? The Jews knew they were going to win because God was on their side. So you can't go to war, to such a war, unless you offer peace. And here too, even though they didn't use that language, Rashi says the same thing was true. They offered Sichon peace. They said, we're not going to attack you. We're not going to take your stuff. But Sichon wouldn't have it. Pasuk Kafei, Vayikach Yisrael et kol harim ha'ele, Vayeshev Yisrael b'kol hareha emori b'cheshbon b'kol b'noteach. So again, what are the verbs in the Pasuk? Vayikach Yisrael. Right, Vayikach in Hebrew. What does the word Vayikach refer to? A kind of a kinyan. Right, when you buy something, and ownership is transferred from the previous owner to the present owner, that's called Vayikach. So they took it, they owned it, right? And then Vayeshev Yisrael b'kol areha emori, and they settled that place. They settled that place. Now, well, how long this took and when this happened and all of the dates, these are always problematic. When you study the Torah, so I want to ignore that. Somehow, Bnei Yisrael conquered the land. They took it as their own, and they settled it. They stayed there in that place. And the question, of course, is, what does that mean? What does that all of that mean? What do you mean they settled it? They're on their way to Eretz Yisrael. They're on their way to conquer the land on the western side of the Jordan. I mean, if they conquered land on the eastern side of the Jordan, what difference does that make? But we know that in our parasha, the parasha of Matot, this question is answered in the most interesting way. So you look here, the second source. Miknerav. Miknerav, they had a lot of sheep. Who had a lot of sheep? Reuven and Gad. These two tribes, Reuven and Gad, had sheep. Atzum me'od. Vayir'u et Eretz Yazer v'Eretz Gilad. So they looked around and they saw the land that they had just conquered, that Bnei Yisrael had conquered, and they said this is perfect for us. This is what we're looking for. Mekom Mikneh, a place where we could put our sheep. Right, we could put our sheep. That's what they said. So all of a sudden in Jewish history, right, there are no longer 12 tribes. In other words, up to now, the 12 sons of Yaakov shared a common experience. You know, they had a little disagreement with Yosef, and they went down to Mitzrayim together. And they got out of Mitzrayim together. And even though they maintained their identities, but their history was the same. They were all together. They did whatever they did together as a group. So even though in the Chanaya, in the way they camped around the Mishkan, the first two parashiyot of Bamidbar, Bamidbar Nasov, where there's a description of the Chanaya B'nai Yisrael. So it's true, every tribe was at its own place and its own identity. However, they had a cumulative history. When they traveled, they all traveled together. And when they stopped, they all stopped together. All of a sudden, Reuven and Gad, these two tribes, later we'll see the addition of Chatzi Shevet Menashe, but Reuven and Gad say, we're not like everybody else. We're different than everybody else. How are we different? We're different than everybody else because we have we have a lot of sheep. Atsumeot, the number is fantastic, the number of sheep. So they said these people, Reuven and Gad, we have special needs. I know we're special needs children, but we're special needs people. And since we're special needs people, we look at the world in a different way. And the land that we just conquered and settled and bought and took as our own are we B'nai Yisrael, which is not in Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael at that time was on the western side of the Jordan River. It's not in Eretz Yisrael. It is, however, bordering Eretz Yisrael. And they say, wouldn't it be great if we distinguished ourselves? If we distinguished ourselves from the rest of the people of Israel and just stayed here, stayed in this place. So you know that Moshe Rabbeinu calls them to task about this. He says, what do you mean? You mean you're going to separate yourself, you're going to be on your own, they're all going to go conquer Eretz Israel and you're not going to go with them. And finally, there was a negotiated agreement between Reuven and Gad and Moshe Rabbeinu and the rest of the Jewish people that the Reuven and Gad would somehow inherit the land, even though the land was conquered by the entire nation of Israel. They would inherit the land. Well, they had a lot of sheep, they had a need, they would inherit the land of Sichon. I mean, that's what it says in Pesukim, but we know that it's Sichon and Og. Both of these kings were the owners, the previous owners of the land. So Reuven and Gad are going to inherit the land, but there's a condition. They're going to have to fight with the rest of, they're going to have to send soldiers to fight with the rest of the people of Israel, the rest of the people of Israel to conquer the land west of the Jordan River, and they agreed to this. They agreed to this, and in the book of Joshua, in the 14th chapter, when the fighting is largely done, that didn't work out as perfectly as they would have liked it to. I mean, they didn't really get rid of all of the non-Jewish residents of Eretz Canaan. But there, Joshua says, okay, we've done it. Reuven and Gad, you can go back to your homes. So, you know, everybody under the age, people who were not of military age, right, under the age of 20 or over the age of 60, were able to stay behind and take care of the rechush, of this property that they had inherited. And all the able-bodied men who were of army age went and helped to conquer the land of Canaan. When that ended, they went back. The people of Reuven and Gad went back, and they started to live over there, you know, on the eastern side of the Jordan River. So you see, it's like an interesting thing happened according to the story that we have in the Torah. that the Jews, or at least some of the Jews, redefined Eretz Yisrael. They gave it a new definition. Eretz Yisrael used to be everything to the west. When Moshe Rabbeinu led them out of Egypt and took them in the direction of Eretz Canaan, where he was going was the western side of the Jordan River. Reuven and Gad redefined Eretz Yisrael to include the conquered territory on the east of the Jordan River. So it turns out that Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, like, if you have a poetic sense, a little bit, not a great poetic sense, but a little bit of a poetic sense, you could say, here's Moshe Rabbeinu. He wants to go to Eretz Yisrael, right? We talked about this last week. He spends time and again figuring out ways to convince the Ribbono Shel Olam that he should go to Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him over and over again, no, you've desecrated God's name, you and Aaron, and you can't go to Eretz Yisrael. But it turns out de facto that depending on how you define it, if Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who gave Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe their land, and if that land somehow, in some manner, in some way, became incorporated into the land which we call Eretz Yisrael, so Moshe Rabbeinu was in Eretz Yisrael, was he not? I mean, he was not in the Eretz Yisrael that he thought about at first, but de facto, he was in Eretz Yisrael, because he's the one who gave the land to Reuven and Gad. And Reuben and Gad, after all, were part of Am Yisrael. And Reuben and Gad were coming to Eretz Yisrael as part of the community, which would then be able to inherit the land. Right? Those words that are used here in the pasuk. Okay. Okay. So in order to give us a little bit of help in thinking about things, I'd like to learn with you something that the Abarbanel wrote, and then something that is in the Igret Kala. So first, the Abarbanel, you should know, the Abarbanel was part of the Gerush Svarad, which is one good date that everybody should remember, 1492. Right, so if you remember that the Abarbanel was part of Gerush Svarad, was 1492. So you know approximately who he was after and who he was before. Approximately. So you know that the Abarbanel was after Rashi and the Rambam, but he was before Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Shulchan Aruch. Now that would be a little bit broad, but it's a start.
Was he really adult at the age of Gerush?
What?
He was already an adult at the time of the Gerush?
Yeah. Because he was an advisor to Ferdinand and Isabella. He was apparently extremely clever, the Abarbanel. And from very early on, everybody expected the Jews to produce people who were very clever. In this case, it didn't help them so much.
Did you say he was an advisor?
He was what?
You said that he was an advisor.
The Ferdinand and Isabella, yeah.
But it still didn't help him.
A financial advisor, I mean.
It didn't help to end the expulsion. It didn't help that he was...
No, it didn't help at all.
That they still had the Gerush anyway.
It didn't help at all. It was quite sad. So the Abarbanel wrote a very extensive, he wrote many books, but one of the things that he wrote was a very lengthy commentary on the whole Tanakh. On all of Tanakh, which is being reprinted now in a kind of deluxe edition. Very good, it's a very helpful, helps you to find things. It's a very good edition. But at the end, when if it ever gets finished, it'll have 20 volumes, so you might not have so much shelf space available, but it's 20 volumes, I think.
CD.
What?
I'm sure it'll be on CD also.
So see, I didn't realize that we had young people here. Yes, it'll be on a CD, but you know, the Bar Ilan, they never get the nicest version. The nicest versions were printed recently, and they all copyrighted. So the Bar Ilan, they have to use old versions, which are more difficult to read and not as good. So I think the printed book still, not for long, but still has some kind of lifespan. So let's look. So the way he did it was, the way the Bar Bedell did it was, he asked questions. That's why they used to say, there was this joke in yeshiva, they say you're not allowed to learn a Bar Bedell on Shabbos. Because if you eat cholent on Shabbos, start learning the Bar Bedell, so on every portion, he asks many questions. And then he starts answering the questions. So if you eat cholent on Shabbos, you start learning the Bar Bedell, you probably go to sleep. And you'll just end up with questions. So that's like, you know, unfavorable. So here you have this. What's printed here says a sheila. I wasn't interested in that. We can skip that and go to the fourth line where it says miknei ravaya libnei ruvein. You see that ad sofa seder until the end of the story. So the Bar Bedell says this. Ein mukdem muchar batorah. Ha'elokit, he says the Torah is not bound by chronology. What is he talking about? That after all, the conquest of the land took place in the parasha of Chukat, as we said at the beginning, and this story about Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven takes place several parashiyot later. So why aren't they put together? Why isn't it really part of one story? So he says, "V'lo nichtav." And you can't say that one of these two parashiyot, or this one in Matot, is written in the wrong place. Because the way the Torah is the way the Torah should be. That's what he says. V'hinei b'seder chukat, ha-Torah nechtevu milchamot sichon v'og, v'nityashvu Yisrael b'artzotam. He says, we saw that, right, in the parish of Chukat. They beat the Sichonites, and they lived there, v'yityashvu. They sat there and actually lived in that place. V'nityashvu Yisrael b'artzotam. U'v'yotam shama kara masha kara le'balak im Bil'am. Uviznut Yisrael benot Moav, vasapin chas bekan atol leilohav, masha asa v'yado Hashem shalom im Hashim onim, v'kehuna olamit b'Yisrael v'tziva sheyutzoverim lemedim v'nimnu Yisrael v'nitzdavu b'yushat haaretz v'chalukata b'yotzei Mitzrayim. So what does he say? He says all the things that are in the Torah, all these stories in the Torah between Chukat and Matot, they all took place while Bnei Yisrael had settled into the land of Sichon. So there was a battle with Sichon, and then they settled in, and then, right, happened Balak and Pinchas and the beginning of Matot. All of those stories took place when Bnei Yisrael had settled themselves into the land of Sichon, right? V'nimnu Yisrael, and then they counted the Jews, v'nitzdavu b'yushat ha'aretz v'chalukata, and they were commanded to inherit the land. Now we're talking about the land of Yisrael, the land on the western side of the Jordan, b'yotzei Mitzrayim. Right, this was a command given to those who left Mitzrayim, v'nitzdava Moshe al inyanei mitato. Moshe was explained by God how he would die. V'al ha-korbanot ha-tzrichim la'asot achrei moto, and all of the sacrifices that would be given after he died. והוא בחינו את דרכו ציווה את ראשי המתות בדיני הפרת הנדרים. And so Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he had to explain certain things to the people, and one of those things was dinei hafarat nedarim, which is in the beginning of the parasha of Matot, that if you take an oath, that oath can be undone, right? Especially if a woman takes somebody's wife takes an oath, her husband can undo the oath. I mean, that's the issue. So the Bar Manel says, okay, Ritzivahu Hashem al milchemet Midyan, v'hu shalach shama mebachrei Yisrael v'iku et Midyan. Then you have the whole story about Midyan, that they fought against Midyan and they beat them ki ish echad v'yaviu et kol shlala, and they brought all of the booty from Midyan. So in other words, what the Bar Manel is saying is that if you just think about it, you'll see that the Torah is written in a reasonable order. Right, first the battle against Sichon, and then the settling of the land, and then the Jews having settled in that land, they ran into the problem of Bilam and Balak and Midian, and then God told them to take a revenge. What happened with Midian, and then the etc. Okay. Vinir eh, and then he says, now we're up to our parasha. Our parasha is these psukim, Mikdei Rava Yelav Nei Ruvain, Vnei Gad, right? You remember? Of all these stories that Bar Manel says, of a Seder, they're in the right place. Why are they in the wrong place? They're all fine. Then he says, Vinir eh, I think, Shebnei Ruvain Vnei Gad, Kanu Mikne Harbei, מלבד החלק אשר ירשו ממחצית הביזה אשר לעדה ומאנשי הצבא, מלבד מה שלקחו מארץ סיחון ועוד. He says, the way I understand, how could they get מקנה רב? How could it be possible that Reuven and Gad had more than everybody else? So he said, well, in the war, they conquered the people in the land of Sichon, right? They conquered the people in the land of Sichon. And with that conquest came all the animals. So everybody who was involved would get an equal portion of animals. So how did they get Mikneirav? So Barbanel, you know, like he has this straight kind of way of thinking about things. He said, well, they made an investment. They bought it. They bought sheep from the other tribes. They bought the sheep in order that they figured the price of wool would go up. They were living in a particular place. Why not? Right? Asher la'idah me'anshei ha'tzava me'vad ma'shalakhu me'eret Sichon ba'od u'mipnei shekibdu b'mikdeh. He said, since they suddenly saw that they had all these sheep, you know, that no one else had them before, they bought it from their neighbors, alal datam lish'ol Eretz Sichon the Og Lachuza. You know, he's like a balabas. He says, what happened? They bought sheep. Why did they buy sheep? They thought it would be a good investment. But meanwhile, after buying all these sheep, they suddenly found themselves without a place. They needed a place to put their sheep. So they thought to themselves, maybe they can inherit the land and have a place. Because they thought that this was the perfect place for them. That's what happened. Reuben and Gad, they went into business, they bought a lot of sheep and they needed a place, and so they looked around and they said, well, maybe this is a good place. Up to then, everybody thought that their stay would be temporary. Now Reuben and Gad said, well, let's make it permanent. And then he goes on and says, a svara. He says, maybe there were other tribes who did the same thing, of the 12 tribes, right? אצל שבטים אחרים בעלי מקנה רב ועצום כראובן וגד, אבל התעוררו אלו השניים לדבר הזה. But these two tribes, Reuven and Gad, were the ones who really went after it. הם לפי שחשקה נפשם להיותם רועי צאן, either because they had great desire to be shepherds, כי הייתה התבונה ההיא בהם יותר מבשאר השבטים. Maybe they had a knack for it. They were good at it. You know, they were good at this business. כי כל דרך איש ישר בעיניו, ויש אנשים אדוקים באושרם ומקניהם, יותר מבכל שאר הדברים. There's some people who just love the money and they love their flocks and they are not like everybody else. וכן היו רובן וגד. And Reuven and Gad were those kinds of people, the Abarbanel says. So the Abarbanel is what we would call, we used to call in yeshivas, it's balabatish. Balabatish means, oh, everybody could understand that. You know, everybody, you go to shul, there are people who, you know, who daven and people talk about business. That's how it is in shul. So maybe Reuven and Gad, they were the kind of people who did business all the time. And they had all these sheep, according to the Abarbanel.
They're practical.
Okay.
Their practicality.
I don't mean to disparage anybody. Practical. Yeah. Practical is good.
And entrepreneurial too, I suppose.
Okay. ובפניכם דתו של גד נזכר ראשונה בסיפור הזה ואימו ואמר עליו משה רבינו עליו השלום וברכתו ותרס רוע אף קוד קוד אין ספק שנשען בגבורתו ולא ירא משכניו הרעים. So God was a special kind of person, a tough guy who was able to fight the good fight. אמנם שאר השבטים לא רצו להיפרד מהדת ישראל. Listen to this. אמנם, are you with me? I'm in the left hand column, the fifth line, two words from the end of the line. אמנם, right? אמנם, שאר השבטים לא רצו להיפרד מהדת ישראל. Remember we said at the beginning that we started out as a in the world of 12 tribes, and the first tribes that we lost from the 12 were Reuven and Gad. And even though there was an agreement with Reuven and Gad that they would go and fight, but when that fight was over, they went home, and they were kind of separate. They lived separate lives. They weren't involved. They weren't involved. So here he says, "Amnam, Shar Hashvatim lo ratzu lipared madat Yisrael sheyu mekubatzim be'eretz hakadosha." He says that the other tribes didn't want to do what Reuven and Gad did, to move away, to live on their own, to be on the eastern side of the Jordan River. They wanted to be in Eretz Yisrael proper, where all the mitzvot that tlot ba'aretz, all the mitzvot that get to Eretz Yisrael are going to be accomplished and done and obligated. V'chazal amru shebnei Reuven v'Gad chibbu kol kach et mamonam sheyishvu b'chutz la'aretz. He says that Chazal pointed out that Reuven and Gad loved money so much, sheyashvu b'chutz la'aretz, they were willing to live their lives outside of Eretz Yisrael. And that's why the original galut of the 10 tribes, remember? 10 tribes? 10 tribes were exiled. Who exiled the 10 tribes? Who exiled the 10 tribes? Sancheriv, who was the king of Assyria. Yeah, fair. He was the king of Assyria. Where is Assyria? To the east, to the north of Eretz Yisrael, right? To the east and the north. If you stay in Yerushalayim, you go to the east of Yerushalayim and you go up north, you get to Assyria. So that means if the Assyrians came to exile the 10 tribes, which tribes did they meet up with first? Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Manasseh. So Chazal understood that Reuven and Gad were the first ones to be exiled by Sancheriv. And because they are the ones who are willing to give up their close connection to Eretz Yisrael. They were willing to give it up. And he says, You can explain it in a different way. Now, what was Reuven doing there? What was Reuven? Why did he agree to give up his place in Eretz Yisrael? Because he was the oldest brother. And then he actually was forced to give up his Bechorah, the rights of the firstborn. And that was given to Yosef. And the firstborn gets Pishnayim, right? Twice as much as any other one. What was the twice as much that Yosef received? Ephraim or Menashe, right? Ephraim and Menashe. So Reuven lost out on that. And kingship went to the tribe of Yehuda. So it could be that Reuven was simply sort of felt left out. He felt that he had been punished for some reason, right? He was embarrassed. So Abarbanel has given us two reasons for why. Why what? Why Reuven was willing to give up his place in Eretz Yisrael proper and live in the land of Sichon. Right? He gave us these two reasons. The first reason was that they loved their money so much, they saw an opportunity. It's like you go to Africa, you go to some country in Africa that has, like they gave it the name 2 days ago. It's hard to know, and you see, who do you find there? Israelis. What are they doing there? They're all making a lot of money, right? They're all making a lot of money. So how can you live in a place like this? They're all making a lot of money. So Reuven, according to Barbanel, that was Reuven. He wanted to make a lot of money. The second interpretation is more psychological. Is that since Reuven lost out on all of the things that he wanted to get, so he wasn't interested in living with other tribes who were younger than he was and less authoritative, but he had lost everything. He lost the Bechorah, the rights of the firstborn, and he also lost Malchut, which would ordinarily have gone to the firstborn, but in his case was passed on to Yehuda. Right? You remember that Leah had children, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Right? Reuven, yeah. Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Yehuda? Why was he called Yehuda? Huh? Oh, Hashem. Awat. Alma. What?
Did she gave birth to him?
No, not that she gave birth to him. That since Yaakov had four wives, and they knew he was going to have 12 children, so even if you went to Cheder, and you didn't go to a fancy school to learn arithmetic, you could figure out that 12 divided by 4 is 3. Right? So it turned out that Leah, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda had 4 children. So a fourth child... She says, Odet Hashem, I give thanks to God because this was not really part of the plan. The plan was that 4 wives, each wife would have 3 children. Well, I had 4. Then his beloved wife, Rachel, right, had only 2 children. Right? Yosef and Binyamin. So now let's look at the Igra Dekala. The Igra Dekala was written by Chassidish Rebbe. It's on Parshat HaShavua. It's written by Chassidish Rebbe. Tzvi Elimelech Midinov. Tzvi Elimelech Midinov. And the most famous book that he wrote, or the famous people have heard of it, is called B'nei Yisoschar. And we're very careful. We always say Yisachar. Right? Do you know that the name Yisachar, Yisachar, we say Yisachar, that the name Yisachar is spelled with two sins, Yud Sin, Sin. A little strange, right? So when we say it, we say Yisachar as though it was only written with one sin. But Balei Kriyah, who are very careful, read the first time the word Yisachar is mentioned in the Torah, they read it Yisachar. But in any event, Tzvi Elimelech Medinov wrote this book on the calendar, on the Jewish calendar, all the things that happened month by month during the year. And it became a very popular book, and it's been put out in many different editions, including editions that have a lot of references, footnotes, extra material, which is very good. So he wrote the book on Parashat HaShavua, and that book, B'nei Yisachar, is about the annual cycle, right? All of the holidays, all the months, the meaning of the month. And a month, of course, with a holiday, that affects its meaning, so to speak. So now I want to... He says this, Smichut Sipur HaMaaseh Lekar Ulekasher Kol HaParashah B'Seder Matim. Exactly the same as the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel, believe me, was not a Hasidic Rebbe. Didn't know anything about Hasidut. It hadn't yet been invented. So, but the Abarbanel says, hey, we have a problem with the order of things in these parashiyot. How come the story of Sichon and the conquest of his land is told in Chukat? And just now, Reuven and Gad, they decide to think about taking over that land for themselves. So he says the same thing, except he talks about our parasha. He says, Smichut Sipur HaMaaseh Lekan, Ulekasher Kol HaParasha B'Seder Matim. Nearly, he says, I'm going to organize this parasha for you. The Hatchalat HaParasha B'Hafarat Nidarim. He says the beginning of the parasha is about undoing vows. Remember? Right? Undoing vows. Shehu miraza de olam ha-machshava. This is one of the secrets of the world of thought. You know that the Kabbalists were very much into the difference, try to differentiate in some more central way, not in a legal way, but in a more profound way. What's the difference in machshava and ma'aseh? Usually we say you didn't do it until you did it, right? But sometimes, like a neder, you say, like a neder, I'm not going to eat that apple. You did it, right? You really created a world in which that apple, or any apple that comes along, is exactly the same as a kind of chazer sandwich. Exactly the same. So that you did it in your mind. You didn't do anything. You didn't act on it. So the Kabbalists, followed by the Hasidim, were very interested in trying to understand how you could differentiate machshava and ma'aseh. Why is it sometimes machshava does it, and sometimes it doesn't? I mean, the second line, Va'avo abal me'efer k'yadua, that we know, that's one of the rules. U'mize yada adam she'utzelem elokim ech yitaher machshavto shelo laharer ba'avira rak b'dveikut ha'borei. So that we know that is very important, since machshava is like doing something sometimes. I mean, there are indications that the way you think about something is the way you've done it, so that you obviously... Even though the mitzvot help you litaher et ha-maaseh, the mitzvot say, don't do this and don't do that, do this, right? Go this way, don't go that way. So that helps you to do what he calls tihur ha-maaseh. But how do you do tihur ha-machshava? How do you do, he says, ha'ein echitar machshavto shelo la'er b'avira, how do you get to the point that you don't think about an avera, about doing some transgression, and all you think about is being close to God? Gainei HaMachshava Alta Al Kulana. After all, we all have this Machshava problem. V'siper Achar Kach Mapelet Midyan, and then after the material about Neder, the Torah tells us about Midyan, Kitzorim Heim Lachem, Menichleem Shenichlut, Parashat Pinchas. Okay. V'achar Kach Siper Hekatzaf Moshe, who hadat al pikudo hachayil, Moshe got angry at the soldiers. Bemet machshavtam hayalitova, they intended good with Midian. Val yidei zehit bonenu apikudim asher alfei hatzava meichan ba hataut al kochechav meherhur avira v'avira goreret avira. Al kein ikriv et korban Hashem lechaper al hirhur halev kibivu al el v'lezei smich. You see, now if you're with me, where I'm in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh line, the seventh line, the fourth word is v'lezei. In other words, up to now, what he said is that all the stories in the parasha, all the stories of Parashat Matot are about thinking right, about thinking correctly about things, about being able to drive out unnecessary thoughts from your mind and being able to sort of get some level of control. So that's why, you know, people say, don't do this and don't do that, right? So, like, how do you tell children that they shouldn't watch television, or they shouldn't watch it too much, or they shouldn't watch certain things? It was, what's the point that the children don't believe you? Well, the point that they don't believe you is that thinking and doing are the same. They don't believe you. Right? So, how could you convince children that thinking and doing is the same thing? Like, if they see a movie with war and war that, you know, everybody kills everybody else, that might not be good for them, might not be good for the way they think about it as well. You know how children are. If they see that their parents think it's not good for them, then it won't be good. They'll come to this conclusion, not good for them either. But if the parents say you're too young for that, which means when you get older, you could think miserable things all you want, just don't do it now while I'm around. So the kids understand that there's duplicity here. Kids want to be like their parents. So their parents have to be like what they tell their children to be like. So it's like, so if you go to shul, and you go with children to shul, right? And you, men or women, it doesn't matter, and you talk to the person sitting next to you, and then a little kid comes up to you and says, "Daddy, Mommy, I need a lollipop," or something. So you say, "What's the matter with you? Don't you see we're David?" So you think the kids don't get it? They get it 100%, that they're supposed to be quiet in shul while their parents talk in shul. Right, so that's it. You know, they've got it all figured out. That the goal in life is to become a parent and talk in shul. Right, so that you know, not so great. So here we are. Listen to what he says. V'lazeh smich maaseh d'bnei Gad b'nei Reuven chatzi shevim Menashe sheba lehem nachlatam michutz ligvul Eretz Yisrael. He said that's why. Why the story of Reuven, Gad, and Chatzis Shevi Menashe is found here in Matot and not back there where they conquered the land of Sichon? Because Mechutz Ligvul Eretz HaKodesh, I am Bilikudei Torah, that's the Baal Shem Tov, I am Maser Mamarot Leyot Shayabem Pigam Bemachshava Bereshit Aviyatam. He says they were like Fatajit. They couldn't think straight. There was a pegam. There was a blemish in the way they think about things that they could imagine. That liyot shiyeh ben pegam machshava b'rosh ha'aviyatam. דיני ברעובן חשב יעקב שהוא רחל והייתה לאה כנודה, וגם בלידת גד לא נתייצא לאה עם יעקב. So he goes on to explain, what's he going to explain? That both Reuven and Gad were born without serious thought, the kind of serious thought that's necessary to produce a child. It was all accidental. Reuven was born accidentally and Gad was born accidentally. So you see, along comes the Abarbanel. And yes, the Abarbanel. What happened? How come they decided to stay in the land of Sichon, not go to Eretz Yisrael? So the Abarbanel says, well, there was money. And the Abarbanel says, well, maybe it wasn't just money. Maybe it was also covered. Right? That Reuven and Gad, they lost their position. They weren't the judges. They weren't kings. They weren't... Okay. Reuven and Gad. Several hundred years later, along comes the Hasidic Rebbe, who was like a great scholar and had tremendous Torah knowledge. And he says, what happened? He says, well, you see it in the parasha. Don't you see in the parasha that thinking is important and your ideas are important? And obviously Reuven, Gad and Chatzishev and Menashe had the wrong idea. It's true that technically they were able to inherit the land that Moshe Rabbeinu had conquered for Bnei Yisrael. That was technically true. But ideologically or conceptually, they were mistaken. They were mistaken. They didn't understand their real obligations. And you see that in the parasha of Matot, because the parasha of Matot is about right think and wrong think. And therefore it's put into that parasha according to the Bnei Yisrael. Egrit, the Kalo, the Bnei Yisrael. That's what he says. So everybody seems to agree. Everybody seems to agree that inheriting the land by Reuven and Gad, Chatzi, Shevet, Menashe, was an imperfect resolution. They should have preferred to receive their inheritance in Eretz Yisrael. However, the rationale behind this nonconformist act is differentiated by the Abarbanel and the Igra de Kala. The Abarbanel says it was like a human failure. Like, you know, everybody has these problems. Everybody has problems of kavod and mammon, money. And so they also had those problems. It was either he emphasizes it or maybe he de-emphasizes it, because he says, like, what do you expect? I mean, someone is always going to have that problem. Somebody in the family. So you look around in the family, somebody's always going to be hungry for the money. Right? That's the only thing that'll bother him or her. Along comes the Igra de Kala and says that even for the 12 tribes, it was possible to think incorrectly about things. And this is the history of Am Yisrael. According to Igra de Kala, right? Yitziat Mitzrayim, they complained. Har Sinai, they built the Ega. The 12 spies, they decided not to go. In other words, in Am Yisrael, all the time, there were those people who thought improperly, incorrectly, unhappily about what their obligations were. And finally, Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, who were willing to give up Eretz Yisrael. And you know that, I mentioned last week, the Medrash says that why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to go to Eretz Yisrael so much? I mean, what was there to do for him in Eretz Yisrael? He wasn't going to go and fight. He says, no, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to do the mitzvot atliyot ba'aretz. He wanted to be included in doing the mitzvot of Eretz Yisrael. He said, that's, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, in spite of that, you're not going. You can't go to Eretz Yisrael. And on the heels of that statement that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made to Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't go to Eretz Yisrael because you caused a chilul Hashem. Following that, almost immediately, Reuven and Gad said, We don't want to go to Eretz Yisrael. We're happy to be here where we are. We're happy to be in the land of Sichon, which was not originally intended to be part of Eretz Yisrael. That's what that's what he says. Okay, have a good shot.
Does he blames see Menashe also for? Because they weren't really part of the original request. They were just added on, by Moshe, right?
He says Reuben and Gad. He explains it for Reuben and Gad also.